The Music of Bees is written by Eileen Garvin, and it comes out officially on Tuesday, the 27th of April, and so it seems like a great time to talk about this book, and especially the fact that Eileen Garvin, who grew up in Spokane, is back in her hometown. So I think it's a great time to have this conversation. And good morning and welcome, Eileen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, a treat to have you back. And we've just recently, just a few weeks ago, got to hear again How to Be a Sister, your memoir that you wrote about growing up and growing up with your sister Margaret. But now we're going to talk about this fiction book, and it has three central characters, Alice, Jake, and Harry. And so let's meet them one at a time and find out these people that you created, that you invented. I think chapter two begins when we meet Alice, so why don't you tell us how you introduced Alice to us in the book?
Okay, yes, I'm just going to read a little bit here to introduce you to Alice Holtzman. Alice Holtzman would have rated her mood below average even before she hit the wall of traffic creeping down Interstate 84 back to Hood River. She blamed the young imbeciles at Sunnyvale Bee Company in Portland who had mixed up her order, which had delayed her departure and landed her in this late afternoon sea of cars and trucks. To be more precise, they had lost her order, which was frustrating because Alice was a regular customer at Sunnyvale and also because, as a point of personal pride, she tried hard to be conscientious. Things were always crazy on Bee Day, an annual event in April, and she acknowledged that. After all, the Sunnyvale Bee Company saw hundreds of millions of bees move through their yard on that single day. When Alice arrived, she saw hundreds of bee packages awaiting pickup. Each small screened crate held 10,000 bees, all buzzing with confusion at their recent sorting in the bee yards of southern Oregon, from whence they came. The precious cargo, trucked in before dawn, had to be picked up, transported, and hived within 24 hours. Hundreds of beekeepers would descend on Sunnyvale to claim their bees on your average bee day. So things could get hectic.
So we learn a lot immediately about this world of beekeeping, about the important things. We certainly learn that Alice is a beekeeper, but we also learn that Alice likes to be in control. So Alice, she's what, in her 40s or so?
She's 44.
Yeah. Yeah. And she lives alone. And so she's used to being herself and being in control. And talk a little bit more about the Alice that we meet.
Yeah, so Alice lives alone now, but she's been married, but is living alone now. But this has been her personality her whole life. She was raised by German-American farming stock, and there's a right way to do things. And her parents raised her to do things the right way, and she always expects other people to do things the right way, but knows they're going to fail. So she sort of has this anticipation of other people not quite following through. And in this particular instance, I think as we'll find out, her impatience is an outgrowth of this grief. I can talk a little bit about so without spoiling the story, Alice is an introverted person who never expected to get married, but a few years prior to the scene, she met this wonderful guy, and he convinced her to get married, and they were very happy together. But when the book opens, we find out soon that he has died suddenly, unexpectedly, and Alice is just a wreck. She's just devastated by this loss. So some of that prickliness is normal Alice coming through, and some of it is just the emotional turmoil she's feeling of having lost this beloved.
But that sets us up nicely for many things that are going to transpire in the book. And even before we talk any more about her, we also get this idea of she and beekeeping in the orchard. So just a bit more about her agrarian background.
Sure. So this story is set in a fictionalized version of Hood River, which is where I live. And Alice is the third generation of Holtzman family farmers in the town. Her parents had a pear orchard that they inherited from her grandparents. And Alice always had this childhood dream of carrying it forward. And that did not happen because of changes in the economy and her parents' decision to sell the orchard. So she's at midlife, having always expected to have her own orchard. And that dream has disappeared. And she's working a kind of a thankless job at the county where she's not progressing and just really looking, as many of us do at midlife, saying, "What is this all there is?" And the beekeeping was a hobby that her recently dead spouse, Buddy, helped get her into. She got a hive and got interested. And so at this point in the story, she has 12. And on this day, on Bee Day, has just purchased 12 more hive starts. So she's going to have 24. And in the course of this, realizing, well, heck, I could really turn this into something. This could be money that I could use to maybe have my own little orchard. So she's seeing the bees as a way to find her way to her own, recapturing a little bit of that lost dream of having an orchard.
So that's great. So we have the very practical goal part of her life, but then we also have the emotional part of her life all tied up in the bees, which we'll figure throughout the book, hence the title, The Music of Bees. Okay, now there's two young boys that come along somehow that are going to fit into this loner woman's life. And so I think we should go to the one that you open the book with, and that is Jake.
Yes. Okay, so this is the introduction to Jacob Stevenson. Jacob Stevenson had the tallest mohawk in the history of Hood River Valley High School. Even before it was listed as an official yearbook record, he was pretty sure about it. In his senior photo, it was a blue-black masterpiece that flared up to a height of 16 and a half inches. Well, almost. It was more like 16 and 3/8, but close enough to silence any quibblers. Jacob had put 6 months into growing the spiky mass, which he sculpted into 4 sections, and it had reached its optimal height right before spring finals last year. On this morning, he surveyed the masterpiece of his hair in the mirror and felt no little satisfaction that he'd managed to maintain it for more than a year now, despite unforeseen challenges. The undeniable truth of a mohawk was that you were always fighting gravity, and at a certain point, you lost. You had to be realistic. The idea was to aim for maximum volume that would hold over an entire day. A fallen mohawk would be a terrible embarrassment, especially for a boy of 18. Jacob had experimented with various products to maintain the loft. He tried egg whites, mustache wax, hairspray, and even some adhesive from woodshop. An unfortunate episode. All that experimenting revealed that a mixture of extra firm sculpting wax and professional grade hairspray was the best choice to sustain that 16 and nearly one half inch height of achievement.
So there we have Jake and his 16 and 3/8 inch mohawk, which sets us up already kind of even a sense of bias. What kind of crazy kid is this? But then you're very quickly going to reveal two other things about him. First, let's next just tell me about his artistic side.
Jacob had musical acuity early on in his life as a young boy that no one in his family could explain. So early in his elementary school, I think 5th grade, he started band and he plays the trumpet, and he just has an affinity for music. But of course, being a boy and being a teenage boy, it's this private love that he hasn't really. He's uncomfortable with. He hasn't quite embraced it, but has gotten as far with. Shall I talk about his what's his future?
No, let's talk about the accident in a minute. So just kind of the sense of otherwise about Jake and his personality.
Yeah. So Jake is when we meet him. Has had a change that we'll talk about, but in general, he's sort of a mouthy, punk, upstart, independent, spirited young person. And he was set to graduate from Hood River Valley High School, and he was going to get out of this hick town and move to Seattle to go to music school at Cornish. And he had...
Which is the hippest thing you can possibly do.
Exactly. Thank you for stating that, making sure everybody recognizes that. And so he's this mixture of punk, for sure, but absolutely loves music and had an affinity for it that was born with him as a kid. His parents are not musical people. His father works construction. His mom is an administrative assistant. Neither one of them has higher education. But he is drawn as a boy to music and is really good at it. And it's the one thing that he's really done well at, where he's kind of screwed up everything else, relationships with his folks, and his grades are terrible. So he thinks he's going to get out of this hick town and have this wonderful future at music school, and that dream is crushed.
And I can also inject that as a brass player and as a conductor, I can easily profile that on top of the mohawk, that a trumpet player attitude of a really good trumpet player sets up a very precise profile
right
here. But now let's go to the other side of the other side that really puts us in an amazing context.
So almost a year to the day before the book opens, Jake is at a high school party in April, and you know, he's told his mom he's going to do the yard work, but he decides to go hang out with his friends for a couple of hours. And he's messing around with some friends and kind of a, I guess, testosterone-infused sort of pushing match. He falls off the roof and just very unluckily lands on a low stone wall and has a spinal cord injury that leaves him in a wheelchair permanently. And so not only is this beautiful dream of musical school gone, but Jacob is dependent on people in a way that he never anticipated and will be for limited in a way that he never expected for the rest of his life. And so he's asking himself in the book's opening, how do I move forward? What do I do with this life that I didn't expect to have? And because he's so young and because he was able-bodied up until this point, he's very angry and not really finding his way.
And let's go only one more step into, therefore, Jake and Alice, with what gets discovered about everything you've said about Jake, especially musically, and how in the world he ends up involved with bees and successfully.
Do you want me to talk about their meet, how they meet?
Please.
So in the early stages of the book, Jake, is the one thing that he's been able to do to get some freedom from his parents' house is go out in his chair. He has a great chair that his classmates paid for, and he's getting kind of his physical exercise to deal with his stress. So he's out on this back road in the Hood River County while Alice is driving home from Sunnyvale Bee Company, and she almost hits him because it's dusk and she doesn't see him. It doesn't expect him to be there. And that's a non-fictional part of Hood River County. There's no bike lane out where these two are. And in this chance meeting, he becomes interested in the bees because when Alice nearly hits him, she crashes into a fence and all the bees go flying, and they have to sit there for a while chatting to each other while she's waiting for the bees to settle down so she can salvage them and get home. That's the way they meet. And the circumstances surrounding how Jacob ends up at her farm are more complicated than I'll get into, but he finds that he is fascinated by the bees and everything he's learned from Alice about how they operate and what the queen does and the worker bees and how they raise the babies. And I am a backyard beekeeper myself, and this is a thing that happens to people sometimes more quickly than others, but you just sort of get really intrigued by them. So Jacob does, and along the way, without spoiling anything, I'll just say he discovers he has a really deft ability to hear the queen, the tone that the queen makes, which is a G sharp or an A flat. And that's this magical thing that he discovers and that makes him even more interested in wanting to be a beekeeper.
So we would have a fairly simple and direct story have evolved so far and could have gone that way. But then we have one other interjection that's from a very different young boy than Jake, and that is Harry. And so let's find out where Harry is coming from.
Yes, and this is Harry Stokes. If Harry Stokes had to choose one word to describe how he was feeling on this particular morning, he would have said, unequivocally, hungry. But it was just a medium kind of hungry, nothing serious. This was not famished or ravenous, and yet it was well beyond peckish. It was the kind of hunger that made him pay attention, a hunger that left him keenly aware that his present situation was untenable. He sat on the steps of his uncle's trailer and dragged his finger along the bottom of the Jif jar. He sucked his fingertip, confirming that the plastic container held nothing but a faint memory of its previous contents. He peered wistfully into the bottom and then lobbed it toward the trash pile. It fell with a thunk and rolled back toward him. A light breeze rose and circled his thin neck like a cool scarf. Harry shivered and pulled up his hood. It was mid-morning, but the sunshine had not yet penetrated the wall of towering Douglas fir trees that rose around the clearing in which the trailer sat. His stomach growled, uncoiling like a cartoon spring.
So there's Harry in a trailer out in the woods, so I guess you better illuminate from there why he's there and maybe a little bit more about just his driftingness.
Yes, so Harry is currently the uninvited guest of his uncle, H, who lives in BZ Corner, which is near Hood River.
And does it really exist?
It really is. And it's actually on the Washington side, and this is where I'm going to get in so much trouble with all the locals because I didn't explain that. It's complicated. The Columbia River Gorge is complicated.
I guess I know it too well. Yeah. I understood completely that it was somewhere up around Bingen, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So it's north of, if you go across the bridge and go up Highway 141, yeah. BZ Corner's up there. And it's not really a town. It's just a little community like I've described. So anyhow, Uncle H lives there in a trailer. And Harry is from Long Island. And he is 24 and has nice parents, and he went to community college. You know, so he's had some advantages, but he's just sort of he doesn't trust himself. He listens to the wrong people. He has bad friends. And so he made some poor choices and ended up driving a truck of stolen goods and spent some time in jail. And so after his parole officer signs off on him being clear to travel, he decides to go. His parents announced that they're moving to Florida. And so now he has to move out of the basement. So he decides he's going to go west and discover himself. And that's kind of all he has planned. And so he makes it that far and is drifting around Seattle, visiting a friend who didn't expect him. And he remembers, oh, my mom has this uncle who lives somewhere near Hood River. So he hops on the Greyhound and ends up finding Uncle H up in the big dark woods of BZ Corner. And Uncle H is really his great uncle. And he's a little bit demented. And he's perfectly fine with Harry just sticking around, and he ends up becoming he's been there for about 2 months by the time the book opens. Mm-hmm. And Harry doesn't really know what to do next either.
But then he is valuable to his uncle as somewhat of a caretaker.
He is, yeah. So mm-hmm. he starts just gradually taking on the responsibility of doing the grocery shopping. And I should explain that Uncle H is living in this dilapidated trailer where there's no electricity, and so they're using a cooler and the insulation is not, and the paneling is banging around in the wind. So Harry sort of wants to help tend to his uncle's needs, and all he's really allowed to do is the grocery shopping and play lots of cribbage and just kind of keep him company. So that's been happening for the last 2 months. Uncle H is now no longer there because he has been on the minds of the social service folks at Skyline Hospital down the hill, and they came to check on him and realized that he was in bad shape, and they took him to the hospital to try and place him in a long-term care facility.
So therefore, Harry is just really hanging out, and we know trailers like this. I know some KPBX listeners that live in trailers somewhat like this, and it's a great scene that you set up that way. So then his encounter with Alice isn't nearly as cosmic as Jake's was.
No, it's not. It's more practical because he realizes quickly that he needs to find a job. And he can't just stay hunkered down up in the tiny town in the woods. There's no work for him to do. He hasn't had any money to start with, but now Uncle H, who's been feeding him, is gone. And so he decides to try and find some work. And his parents ran a landscaping business in Long Island, so he has great handyman skills. He's a hard worker, and he means well. So that's where mm-hmm. Harry's the plus side of Harry.
Well, and he's especially a good builder, isn't he?
He's a good builder. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a good carpenter. And so he applies. He sees Alice's ad for she's hiring a part-time worker for her farm, and she sort of wants a jack of all trades that can lift heavy things, but specifically carpentry is something she wants because she's interested in building her apiary out, and she wants to build the hives herself instead of purchasing them. So Harry thinks, oh, okay, I could probably do that.
So then we end up with these two very different young men and Alice all in the same place. And I think the only other thing I want to mention or ask you to talk about is how Harry and bees work out.
Yes. So Harry, poor Harry. Harry gets introduced to the bees after Jacob has been introduced to the bees. And Jacob, for reasons I won't go into, it just feels very comfortable and he doesn't wear any protective gear. And so these two young men are 6 years apart, but to a middle-aged person, that doesn't seem like much, but I'm sure Harry was feeling a little bit like, oh, well, this young kid isn't wearing any protective gear, so I'm going to meet the bees, just I'm going to do what he's doing. And Harry is terrified of the bees. He knew that going into it. I should say that when he's applying for the job, the one thing he's not interested in is the bees because he doesn't like insects. But he gets there, he's being introduced, and he's, okay, I'm going to do what everybody else is doing. And so he doesn't put on a protective veil or gloves or anything. And when Alice opens the hive to show him how it works and start explaining things to him, the bees fly up in his face, which is what they do every single time. The guard bees will come check you out to see what you're doing. And instead of just being calm, he starts yelling and slapping them, and then they sting him, and then he runs away into the woods, followed by the dog, screaming because, that's his first and short and violent introduction to the bees.
And so now we've met these three main characters of The Music of Bees by Eileen Garb and my guest here. And I think you've set up all of the wonderful differences that can make for a great story. So we're not going to follow that storyline any farther because I don't want to take away anybody's joy of discovering these things. Maybe we almost dangerously took away a couple of good surprises already in the story. But still, there's plenty to go. So then the other thing that I want to move to is some of the issues, the larger issues of ecology and farming and the tension between farmers and different farm needs and agribusiness and all of that.
Sure.
So to the extent that you want to reveal this, talk about how you use this to really inject some of the tension into the story.
Well, I think that honeybees are a really accessible entry point for people to understand human impact on the environment. Because even if you live in an apartment in Manhattan, you see honeybees at the park. Everyone loves honey. So it's an easy connection to make. These are creatures that we all depend on and enjoy the fruits of their labors, and humans can impact them in a negative way. And in this story, I fabricated a nefarious pesticide company that enters into a contract with the Hood River County to not only give their pesticide to the orchardists for a good deal, but they're also going to be spraying the noxious weeds in the county. And it's, a metaphor for showing how big ag can have a huge impact on a small place quite easily. Again, it's fiction, and I'm not a scientist, but it's just looking at the ways that not only how big business and large scale use of pesticides has a negative impact on the environment, but the inverse of that, how in a small town, in a small community, you can make a difference and you can take a stand and make your voice heard and make change happen so that there's a little bit more, there's opportunity for coexistence.
And so then that also within that coexistence has plenty of tensions in the town, too, including some of the tensions within the farm community and even basically the beekeepers and the orchardists.
Sure. And they're not entirely separate groups either, because some of the beekeepers in Alice's group, the Gorge Beekeeping Group, some of them are farmers or retired farmers. And so some of them don't want to believe that there's any problem with pesticide use because that's how they've been running their businesses for so many years. And others are very vehemently against any use at all. And so that's a conversation that has to happen among the farming community. And then it also impacts the schools and we end up, you know, the healthcare workers are involved in it as well.
And so there's kind of that part of the story. And at this point in the time we're spending together, I don't want to really go much farther on any of these things. There's many other great things in the story. There's the evolution each character makes based on each other and then on many other factors. There's love interests. There's many lovely things that go along in this story, the music of bees. And so I guess kind of as we're moving toward the end of this discussion, we know you through your memoir about some real life that you grew up with when you wrote How to Be a Sister. Talk about writing fiction and the way that fiction maybe can tell truth in some interesting ways that you got into.
Sure. I think the experience of writing this was very different from writing the memoir in a way that the memoir were stories that family stories that we've been telling for years, and it was just a question of how to put this together and what did it have to do with my life now at the time I wrote it. And the fiction was a completely wild ride, and I've always wanted to write fiction, and this story came to me. Can I tell you the origin story?
Please.
So my dog had had surgery on her ACL, and I knew she was going to have a 3-week recovery. And so I just picked her up from surgery, and she was snoozing off her anesthesia. And I went to pick up a new package of bees at dusk, and I bought them from a farmer in the South Valley. And as I was driving to pick up the bees, I was passed in the other direction by a young guy in a wheelchair with a mohawk. And Hood River is a fairly small town; it's 7,000 people. But I don't know who this guy was, and I haven't seen him since. But I had that one of those writer's moments that the first line popped into my head, and I was so struck that I pulled over and I scribbled a note, and then I picked up my bees and went home. And the next morning, I put my bees in their hive, which was a procedure. And then I sat down for the next 12 weeks every morning with my dog in her little pen, keeping her quiet, and I wrote the story. And it was such a pleasure, and it's like I've heard other writers describe where I was just trying to just hang on, and the story unfolded. And sure, there's some manipulation after the fact where revision is a huge part of writing, a huge part of writing. But the initial impetus of these three, they just kind of came, and I felt like I was just trying to keep up as their stories developed.
What encounters of your life have you had with boys like this? Have you had any? Did you grow up with brothers?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So there are five of us, and we were all born within 6 years, so we're very close. And my two brothers are two of my best friends. I love them. And I have often thought of myself as the third son in the Garvin family. I was the last kid, so very much thrown in with the mm-hmm. boys. And I've always had a lot of male friends. In high school, I had a lot of guy friends. And I suppose Jake, a lot of his core issues are some of those friends I had in high school. It wasn't uncommon for someone to fight with their parents and get kicked out or leave and go live with somebody else and their mom and dad for a while. So Jake's troubles were the troubled teen is something I certainly was familiar with.
It's never even fair to ask a writer whether the main character of the same gender is any relationship to her own personality. So we'll just leave that one right out there for people to enjoy this book, The Music of Bees, written by my guest, Eileen Garvin. What a treat to be with you and to have this story come really into three dimensions.
Thank you so much, Fern.